Welcome to episode 459 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast from the digitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And we are recording today on Patriot Day. You know what that is, Josh?
I do know what that is. That is September 11th, which was 17 years ago.
Yeah. Man. Kind of hard to imagine. It's one of those moments. It's one of those moments in time that I know exactly where I was. I know exactly what was happening. And, you know, 8:46 every year means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, why don't we move on past that solemn note and remind all of our listeners, or for any of our new people, that this is a show where we talk about consumer entertainment technology. We've got a little bit of a focus on Microsoft tech, but we go all over the place. So, and our news goes really all over the place tonight. So, which is good because our listener feedback, it goes nowhere tonight because we got none. So if you want to send us some for next week, you can shoot us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Richard, our big story, this is weird. This is super weird because in our show notes document that you and I share, it's just headlined with Cydia. And a lot of our listeners probably wouldn't even know what Cydia is. And those that do are probably thinking, wait a second, this isn't Home On. What is there to talk about from Cydia?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that Cydia actually has a huge base of vendors that support the entertainment space. There are a lot of vendors there that are providing audio and video technology to custom installers. And over the years, we've seen this space expand to be more than just what you get through installers. But I can also go there and find out about kind of, you know, what's going on in the space in general, not just the high-end market.
Okay. So, and I've actually heard, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I've never been there, so I wouldn't know, but I've heard that the audio video portion of Cydia is probably actually the biggest section at Cydia.
Oh, it definitely is. And I might argue that it's probably a better presence to really find out what companies are doing than what you might see at CES, which you and I attend every year. And the main difference is that these companies are bringing their A game to this. They're not bringing every model that they possibly sell. They're bringing their prototypes as well as their really cool new products. And the, you know, the catalog products, they leave those at home because that's not what this market cares about.
Okay. So what did you see at Cydia that our DIY home entertainment enthusiast would be interested in?
Well, the first thing that I got excited about is something that you and I disagree about. And that would be the Hisense laser projector television that is a 4K projector on anywhere from, say, 83 inches of a screen to 120 inches, I think, is the largest one that they have. And you and I got a chance to see these at CES. And I firmly believe that between the content that they were showing and the environment in which they were demonstrating the projector, you didn't get a very good feel for what this is like in a home theater, in a family room. We were under big, bright lights. Well, that is before all the lights went out. Because we were looking at these at the time that blackout at CES occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also showing this really weird video of FIFA footage that looked like it was really blocky. And yeah, it had terrible motion, and it just didn't really show off the capabilities of, well, frankly, any television, let alone a projector.
Right.
one of the things that they were showing there was their newer lower end, their 83-inch. And the 83-inch projector comes with an 83-inch screen specifically designed for this projector. It's a one-laser projector. So unlike a lot of laser projectors that are designed for short throw, which means it's just this little box that sits maybe a foot away from your wall. I say a little box. It's about the size of an old Betamax, if you're old enough to remember what that is. It's a big little box. But it sits about a foot away from your wall and projects in that short distance an 83-inch image onto the screen that they provide. The image that they have is, I think, really impressive for what this is, a short throw projector for a tight theater space where you don't want to mount something on your ceiling. And here's the kicker. It's $4,300. That compared to what it would cost for a really good projector from the ceiling for an 83-inch picture and a screen is typically going to cost way more than that. So cost-wise, they've come in at a really nice price here. Now, the other thing is that this is also a smart TV. The projector includes Netflix and YouTube and some other service that I don't remember. It has audio return channel. It has four HDMI ins. It has onboard speakers that you probably don't want to use because they're onboard speakers. But overall, it's a really nice product. And I think for an entry level short throw projector compared to the insanely expensive projector that Sony has been showing for years now and still requires practically pitch black to demonstrate, as they did this year in a very, very dark space, I think Hisense has a really nice offering here. So something for people to look for if they're interested in this. This is available now. You can buy it today.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and just give you the benefit of the doubt that it does actually look really good and that it was just the circumstances and probably largely just the content that I saw on it when we were at CES that really clouded my view of what this TV / projector, I guess, actually looked like. So you've seen it multiple times now and you've liked it every single time. So
yeah, and the other thing that is that you kind of have to keep this in perspective. It's a single laser. Most short throw projectors are dual laser, so they're saving some money there. And it means your picture is not going to be as bright. But the other thing that we need to remember is that when you're at these shows, you're looking at all these brilliant LEDs that are tuned up to their ultimate setting for display under bright lights. And that is not going to compare to what you're going to see in a projector. As far as projectors go, I think this compares very nicely.
Okay, cool. All right, what else did you see while you were there?
You talked about 8K TVs last week.
Sure did.
I saw a lot of them. Everybody's
showing. How close did you get to them?
Oh yeah, well they let you get a little bit close to these. You can still see pixels if you look close enough. But yeah, my advice I think is pretty similar to your advice. Don't buy one of these yet. Just don't.
Yeah. No. No, definitely don't. Were they even talking prices at CEDIA?
I didn't want to ask.
You're like, I don't need to know the price because I'm going to tell people not to buy it, well, no matter how
right,
much they cost.
Exactly. And so, you know, there are two things here. One is that for the most part, these are just hitting the market, so they're going to be ridiculously expensive.
Right.
I'm going to make this three things. The second thing is that if you're looking at sizes like 65 inch or 75 inch, it's useless. Because you're not going to really notice a difference. 65 inch is where you really start to notice a difference in 4K.
Right.
So 65, 75 inch is just, it doesn't make sense until you get to the insanely expensive, really large 105 inch screens.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not going to see the benefit of 8K. And at that size, the pricing is just ridiculous right now. Now, the other thing to consider is that there is really not much 8K content. Nobody's producing 8K media formats right now. There's no, there's not even discussion of an Ultra HD 8K format. You can get 8K video on YouTube. Red cameras can create 8K. Some studios are filming in 8K. That's wonderful. But how do you get it? So right now, pretty much everything's upscaled. And so everybody's talking about their amazing algorithms. We have thousands of algorithms that know that Stranger Things gets upscaled this way as compared to something that you're watching on YouTube. Really? Well, but the AI. Oh, geez, right. The AI. So, yeah, my advice is just don't. At some point, this may make sense. It just does not make sense right now. Now, that said, every once in a while, it's awesome to see a really cool concept product. And Sony, as far as I'm concerned, has blown away Samsung's wall that we weren't allowed anywhere near earlier this year at CES. Remember the wall? I think it was something like 12 to 15 feet away from the wall.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Where the whole wall was a video screen, and it's pretty, but you're not allowed to get too close to it.
Right.
Sony has what they're calling their crystal LCD display. It's an 8K display that is just friggin' enormous and blew me away. It was by far my favorite, so the sky's the limit and you don't care if something's real or how much it costs. What's your favorite thing at the show? This was by far my favorite thing at the show. It is gorgeous. Absolutely.
150-inch 8K TV.
Yeah. Right? yeah. Absolutely gorgeous. So that is pretty much it for new TVs. I did want to talk about a couple things that are interesting on things that are going on with TV and video. One is, and I credit friend of the show, John Biggs, for pointing out to me that there are TVs that are now compatible with Calman, the calibration software that is used to get that best picture that you can get with a particular TV set. Now, you have to think about this one a little bit because it kind of hurts your brain. Your TV has compatibility with calibration software built into it, but you still have to calibrate it.
So what is it doing?
What is that about, right? So if any of you have ever experienced calibration or seen a calibration happen, calibration is basically taking your TV and you put a kind of like a camera eye or a camera lens right against the television in a couple different locations on the television. And you're reading the color and the intensity of that color that is coming out of the actual screen. That is different than all of the settings that are in the screen, but it is tuned by the settings that the TV has. And so what companies like LG and Samsung and some others are starting to do is realize that, well, you know what? We have these professionals going out and calibrating these things all the time. Why don't we make that so that it's not a 3-hour task? Why don't we come up with a way of taking the settings that come out of the calibration, which is really the optimized results of taking all of these different pictures with this camera hanging in front of the TV that happens on a PC. You know, this is happening on software that runs on a PC. And instead of making you then take those settings and put them into the TV administrator console with a remote control, which I can tell you firsthand is a royal pain in the backside, let's just let the software directly communicate with the television and send the settings right to the TV.
Oh, okay. That's way nicer.
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah. It is really slick. I love the way they've implemented it. And everybody that has kind of gotten the certification to implement this has done it in a way, as far as I can tell, that goes deeper than even that admin menu would give you access to. It's not changing the settings that you could change yourself. It's actually changing underlying core values that impact the display of the picture. So you have an opportunity to calibrate it even better than if you were doing it yourself.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. So really nice addition to things like that. Another thing on the TV side, this is something I think I talked about a couple years ago. About 2 or 3 years ago, Savant came out with a remote control, a media remote. Savant is a big company that provides huge entertainment and home control systems for installers to, to put in high-end homes. But they also came out with I'll call it a DIY remote, but it's not really a DIY remote. They
not
came
for that
out
price.
Yeah, they came out with a remote that started at $500 that you could buy at your Best Buy store in their Magnolia section. Ultimately, they realized that they weren't really going to be able to serve that market well. The market didn't understand who Savant was. Savant really didn't know how to serve the direct consumer because they're used to working through dealers. So that didn't really go anywhere. But they continued to improve the remote for the pros, for the installers. And one of the things that they did this year is they actually built Siri into their remote for when you're controlling Apple TV. Now, I'm saying that slightly in a disingenuous way. What they're really doing is they're passing through their voice remote capabilities that were already on board, and they're passing your voice recording to Siri, and then Apple is processing that for you. So you can use their remote to control your Apple TV with voice, and you no longer have to use that piece of crap candy bar remote that they gave us about a year or two ago. And they're still trying to sell us on as like the best remote ever. And it's not.
Right. No, it is far from the best remote ever.
And what this is doing, this does two things that I think are really interesting. One is that it's taking advantage of a brand new API that will be out in iOS 12 that frankly won't be released by the time that you're listening to this show in most cases. And the second thing that it's doing is this is really the first remote of any kind to pass audio through to another system. One of the problems that we have with voice right now is that everybody does voice differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's smart enough to know that if you're watching Apple TV, the voice then should be Siri. And it knows how to do that. And I think this is brilliant. Now, why am I talking about this? If this is only through a dealer, is because even though it's only through a dealer, the starting price for this is somewhere between $750 and $1,000 for the complete solution installed in your house from a dealer, which frankly, for what this is, isn't terrible. I would say that this is probably a better remote control solution for the devices that are available to many people today than what I might normally talk about with the Harmony.
But is this still it's just the remote, right?
It is just a remote, but it is a remote that has a screen on it that gives you all kinds of feedback. So right. One of the things that this lets you do is it lets you interact with, say, Sonos. Mm-hmm. And you can control your Sonos library, and you can scroll through your Sonos content, and you can see the album art and see what's playing. And so there's a whole lot of flexibility with this remote, very similar to what you get with the Elite remotes. I know it's way more expensive than the Harmony Elite remote, but
which is already really expensive.
Which is already really expensive, but this is probably, I mean, of all the things that I've tested out there, I think this is one of the best remotes that you can buy, and I'm really critical about remotes.
Yeah, if you say it's great, then I believe you.
But
I just
it costs
can't
money.
Imagine spending $750 to $1,000 to, and to be clear, like you said, it is not just for the remote. You said it's $750 to $1,000 to get the remote and have them set it up for you, which is no small task if you've got a lot of devices.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is something worth talking about, even if it's not something that is a direct-to-consumer product. All right, speaking of stuff that's worth talking about, even if it's not a direct-to-consumer product yet, maybe, you know, you and I, 2 years ago, wandered into a booth at CES, and we said, oh, look at that. They're selling an expensive home theater PC. What year is this? 2016. That's interesting.
Right.
Well, they now have a product that is available for distributors and for installers. I'm talking about Modulus. When we looked at this, Josh, I think they were saying it was going to be $3,000.
That sounds right.
And the idea is, it is your home media server. It connects to your TV. It is your home base for all of your entertainment. It has tons of onboard storage. It has extenders that allow you to use it in other rooms. But the base was $3,000. It's 2 years later. They actually kind of took a step back and said, all right, if we're going to do this, then we need to be more than a home theater PC. We need to do this right. And I entered their booth ready. Well, I mean, you know me. I'm like all about the snark, right? With something that I don't like.
Oh, yeah.
And I entered with all of the hard questions. I think the first thing that I said to the guy was, oh, so do you have product out yet?
Jeez.
An hour later, I stayed there for an hour, Josh. An hour later, I think I'm a convert for this thing.
Really?
They have really created a beautiful whole home media environment that's designed to compete with stuff like Kaleidoscope or Kaleidoscape, I think is the name of it, which was that media server where you would rip your Blu-ray discs and you would have all these movies available, except they were nearly sued out of existence. They still exist. And their product starts at $10,000. This product is going to be $3,200 to dealers wholesale. So then it'll probably be available to consumers somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000. But remember, this is now being targeted not to you and me, the person who is going to go and just like build something themselves or buy something at a store. This is being targeted to people who are spending thousands and thousands of dollars on a big screen and a projector and a home theater and all of that stuff. So from a pricing perspective, they're cheap compared to what everything else is doing.
And it does a lot more than what you or I could build, because they have a bunch of custom software too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So they have a built-in DVR. Sure, we had that with Media Server. They have a media storage capability for 20 terabytes built-in.
Jeez.
That's not a starting point. That's not the high end. That's just what it comes with, 20 terabytes. Wow. They built their own commercial skipping logic so that you'd be able to skip commercials. And it's not like 30 seconds at a time. It's like you and I have become accustomed to with some of the, you know, sometimes clever, sometimes janky software that we used on Media Center that would allow mm-hmm. us to skip all the commercials at once.
Right.
They built their own remote. It's beautiful. Everything's in the right place. It has a keyboard on the flip side. It's smart enough to ignore button presses on the bottom side, regardless of which side is on the top or the bottom. They created a streaming DVR. So if you have Netflix or Hulu or HBO Now or HBO Go or whatever other service, and they have all of them available to you, they're recording streams the same way that Play on TV is doing the same. Wow. Now that concerns me.
Uh-huh.
They have a patent for that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have a precedent where someone in a court has said, yeah, sure, you can get away with that. And you and I have talked about what PlayOn has been doing for years, wondering how is this legal?
Right.
But it's cool. And it's built in. Oh, by the way, the commercial skipping works with that too.
Wow.
Right. They have an optical disc built in. It's not 4K. It's Blu-ray. So I would imagine that as far as 4K goes, we're probably looking at a second generation box that might be able to do something like that. But right. I was blown away by what they were showing me. When you and I were looking at this, they were in this mindset that, oh yeah, well, everything's off the web and, you know, your remote is basically just a big mouse and you can move around any web page like you normally would. And that's how you get any service that you want. And they realized that that was not going to work.
Yeah.
And they created a holistic interface across all these different services that is beautiful, that is consistent, that works with a D-pad the way you would expect it to. And I think they're going to have a lot of success with this, but not something you're going to be buying in Best Buy.
No, definitely not.
Now, here's one more thing that this does. This also has Plex. Well, now, why would it have Plex if you can put all your movies on it, right? One of the things that they've decided is that they're going to basically integrate with any service that is willing to integrate with them. And that includes their own ability to serve up movies that you have captured or the movies that you already have in your Plex library without having to recatalog them. As far as I know, nobody is integrating the index of what you own with what's available online. Not even the Kavo box has the ability to do that. If you search for a title or if you want to see titles that are in a particular genre or date range or whatever, and you do that by voice or by typing, you're going to get results that show you everything that's available online. It doesn't know what you own. They cross index with what you own. So that problem where you're searching for stuff, but you potentially end up renting or buying something that you already have somewhere.
Right.
You don't have to worry about that anymore because they've thought of it. And as far as I know, they're the only people that have thought of it. Oh, did I mention it has a TV tuner in it? Yeah, Seton made the card for them.
So that's a 6-tuner cable card tuner?
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. So they've combined linear, your library, online, everything into one consolidated place. I don't know anybody else that's doing it.
No. No, no one.
So I just hope they're not sued out of existence.
Right. I mean, it sounds really great. I'm really curious how they're doing all the over-the-top stuff. But, and I think what's maybe the most shocking of all of it is that you like all of it. You like the UI. You like the remote. Like, those are two huge sticking areas for you on so many things that we see from huge companies. And this tiny little mom and pop shop put together something that you love.
Right. Literally mom and pop shop. Like this is a husband and wife that started this company.
Right.
It's really impressive what they've done. And they've gone so far, just even in the last year. I saw what they were showing last year and I didn't like it yet. So I'm really impressed. I'm blown away. And even if it's not in our space, if it's an industry leader, it has the potential to drive where we're going. And that is a great thing. All right. Two more things real quick. One, I went to a demo. If you don't know, one of the things that many of these vendors have is their own little demo rooms. And of course, Dolby Atmos is one of the big things that speaker companies want to demonstrate right now. How you can convert your theater to Dolby Atmos or the experience that you can create in your home. And so Origin Acoustics, which is a pretty well-known high-end speaker company, had an Atmos demo that like knocked my socks off. I have Atmos. I love Atmos. I've seen a bunch of Atmos demos. I've seen Dolby's Atmos demo. They had at Origin Acoustics a concert video that they were demonstrating that just was like a religious experience for me. And 2 minutes after seeing their demonstration, I had purchased the demo disc that they were using, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. One more thing that I don't even have in the notes here. I finally had a chance to meet Charlie Kindle. If you don't know who Charlie Kindle is,
he's the guy that invented the Kindle.
Well, no.
No, I'm just kidding.
However, he did work at Amazon. He now works at Control 4, which is one of the big integration companies for smart home tech. But he previously worked at Amazon, and he was responsible for the Amazon Echo and the smart home ecosystem that the Amazon Echo supported. And I had lots of negative and you need to get better kind of things to say about that ecosystem. And I still do. I think it has a long way to go. And I had a great opportunity to talk with him about, you know, what was happening there, what's happening at Control 4, the cool things that they could be doing. Did you know that Charlie Kindle was also one of the original guys behind Windows Media Center?
Yeah.
So I did not know this. And I had an opportunity to really geek out with him and talk with him about Media Center. And yeah, oh my God, I have a Media Center podcast. Well, not so much anymore. But yeah. And so that was just really fascinating for me. I had an amazing time talking with him. And, you know, he kind of confirmed what we knew all along for the last couple of years, that whole idea that it just wasn't a big enough business for Microsoft to care.
Yeah, that's probably a fair way of putting it.
That's the nicest way that I can put it. We probably share different words than those.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
All right. So that was pretty much it for the stuff that I've seen at Cedia. But actually, our first video, our only video topics, are also from discussion that I had at Cedia. And that's because I met up with Ted Head from Silicon Dust while I was there. What do you want first, Josh? The good news or the bad news?
Oh, I like to end a segment on a high note. So why don't we start with the bad news? Because especially since I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah, you know that Prime 6 that we were talking about and joking about maybe not seeing by the middle of this year?
Yep.
Yeah. My analysis after talking with him, these are not necessarily his words. My analysis after talking with him is that we'll be lucky if we see it at the end of the year. I said to him, Ted, you know what's going to happen if you don't have this out the next time we sit down with you at CES. He's like, yeah, I know, I'm not showing up. No, I'm just kidding.
They're just going to move their suite and not tell us.
Well, they are doing right? that, but he did tell me.
Oh, okay.
They are moving it, thankfully. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
The Prime 6 is taking more certification back and forth than they anticipated, which does not surprise me at all.
Nope. When you're dealing with cable labs, nothing goes quickly.
Right. So, you know, they're a small company. They have limited resources and they're working with this, you know, large, not really large, but with this kind of certification lab, and the process is always tedious. It always has been. And when anyone says something has to go through certification, it kind of doesn't matter what certification we're talking about. Right. You have to assume there's going to be back and forth. It's just not going to be right through.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to think that we'll see it by the end of the year, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. I think there's a fairly decent possibility that it may actually ship more at the beginning of next year than by the end of this year. They're absolutely not going to see Christmas. It's not going to happen.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. And so, like I said, that's a little disappointing, but it's not that unexpected because, as you said, when it comes to these certification processes, everything takes a while. The certification itself takes a while. The back and forth adds a bunch of time, and all of that back and forth cost a lot of money. So
absolutely,
yeah, not surprising.
Absolutely. All
so
right.
So what's the good news?
The good news is that I was right. Well, that's not really putting it fairly. Remember when I joked about the Home Run premium TV service maybe being a distraction? It wasn't actually a distraction for us. It was a little bit of a distraction for them.
Mm.
Because again, it takes resources that are familiar with the platform to make something like that available to the software that, you know, in the software that they already have. But they have come out with what I think is a really impressive premium TV offering.
Oh, definitely.
And it did take some research, some cycles that might otherwise have gone to getting other stuff like the Prime 6 done. But they're talking with their provider now about some add-on packs because they're already hearing from customers that not all the channels that they want are there. You know, I was complaining that BBC America isn't there. Other people were complaining that sports channels that they wanted to see aren't there.
Yeah, for sure.
And so they're now working with their content provider to potentially put together some add-on packs that then Silicon Dust could make available to their HD Home Run users. And you could kind of like opt into these additional packs of channels, which is a great idea. I like that. I think that that's really slick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not an unusual way of doing it. You know, Sling and everybody basically does it this way.
Right, but what I like is that they didn't do that out of the gate. Like, they came out with something really simple to start with, so you don't have to think about it too much.
Yeah.
And then they're going to enhance it with additional offerings in the future, and I think that's really smart.
Yep.
Now, the other thing that they're doing is that they're working on I guess I would call this, like, an artificial lineup so that if you're integrating the channels that you get through their service with what you already get on Plex through your HD Home Run, over the air tuner or whatever else, that Plex is going to be able to understand what channel maps to what. Right now, we talked about how you can have one grid and you can have all your channels integrated, and that is absolutely true. But to be completely honest, it's kind of a pain in the butt to set that up right now, because you have to manually map each of those channels. It's not something like it knows that, oh, well, this stream means this channel. That's just that, you know, it works a little bit differently than the way that channel lineups usually work. So they've fixed that. And that is something that is going to be coming out in an upcoming release. So that's good news.
That is good news. It's really good news.
All right. I have talked for way too long now. So I am going to let you pick things up and take us into audio and gaming news.
All righty. This is audio news that I'm excited to see and to check out, because our first story is about SoundCloud. And I really like SoundCloud. I don't use it every single day by any stretch. I'm still primarily Spotify, but SoundCloud is a great place to find music from maybe more up and coming artists, because they're doing whatever they can to get on as many services as they can. So SoundCloud gives them that platform. And now SoundCloud, they're doing something new for them that isn't new for their competitors, of course, but it's really nice to see. They're calling it SoundCloud Weekly, and it's basically just every Monday they're going to release new personalized playlist for you. So when I sign in, I would get a different playlist than Richard would get. And it's
For sure.
And it's music that's based on the stuff that you're already listening to. So, you know, most of the stuff that I'm listening to on SoundCloud is, you know, various EDM DJs and all that stuff. You know, that's what I'm finding over on SoundCloud. And sometimes that music is hard to find. So getting more and more suggestions of that type of stuff, I am all for. So tomorrow, when I'm ready to start listening to some music at work, I'm going to fire up SoundCloud and give this a listen, because I think this could be really good if you're into using SoundCloud for finding, you know, maybe it is more obscure stuff, maybe it's not, but for me, that's definitely how I use it.
You know, it's funny, when you say obscure, the word that comes to mind for me when I think of SoundCloud is indie. And I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's the impression that I get of SoundCloud. It could very well be that major artists also put their stuff out there, but if that's true, I don't know of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I see a lot of major artists that are doing that. I mean, one of my favorite DJs of the last couple of years puts, like, I think I found him on SoundCloud, and he had his first album entirely on SoundCloud. You could listen to it for free, you know, because it's just on SoundCloud.
Who's that? I gotta know who's that.
It's Illenium. It's sort of like Millennium, but just without the M at the beginning.
Yeah, I have no idea who that is.
He's really good. He's really, really good. And now it was a few months ago, but I was looking at his profile page on Spotify, and in Spotify it says like his ranking in that genre or something like that. And he was in the top couple of hundred or something. Like it was really high for what I thought was a guy that maybe hardly anybody knew. And that's not the case anymore. So yeah, for maybe indie is a better way of describing the stuff that you're more likely to find on SoundCloud, but either way, it's service that I really dig, and I'm happy to see this feature coming. I know it's available on the web and it's available on the mobile platforms. What I wonder is if it's available on Xbox, because there is an Xbox and Windows 10 app for SoundCloud. And depending on the game that I'm playing, I really like the SoundCloud app, because like if I'm playing a racing game or something like that, where it's just nice to have different background music, then I'll usually pop up SoundCloud and use that with Xbox's background music playback capabilities and listen to that stuff instead of the game's built-in music and stuff. So I hope it's there too.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So on to our gaming section, the first thing we have to talk about here is a fairly new product that, Richard, you got us for review, but you sent it to me to do the review because I'm the big time gamer here. I know most people aren't on video, but this is what it looks like. It's a microphone. And just a microphone.
You might envision a microphone that would otherwise be normally attached to a headset, but it's right. Just the microphone part.
It's a boom microphone that isn't attached to anything. There's just a microphone cable coming out of it. It is called the ModMic 5. This is from a company. Do they pronounce it Antlion or something else?
Yeah, that is how they pronounce it.
Okay. And this is neat. You know, like I said, it's the ModMic 5, so they've been revising this product a few times over the years. And this one's got some really nice new features. So I think one of the most unique features on it is at the very end of the mic, right by the part that where the actual microphone diaphragm is, there's a little switch on it, and it changes whether it's an omnidirectional versus a unidirectional mic. And for a lot of people, they wouldn't know what that means. So they don't actually call it that. They call it omnidirectional and noise canceling, which probably isn't accurate either, but it kind of makes it a little bit more understandable. So omnidirectional, it actually does sound better, but if you're in kind of a noisy environment, then it's going to pick up all that background noise, and that's going to be bad, regardless of how you're using your microphone. If you're recording a podcast, if you're playing games, if you're doing a Skype call with somebody, if you're in a noisy environment, you don't want all that background noise.
Right.
But if you're in a really quiet environment, it does sound a lot better.
Imagine taking like a video with your phone, and if you're in a quiet environment, it might sound fine. But if you're in a big, loud environment and you're trying to hear someone talk, you're trying to hear them talk over all of the other noise around you.
Exactly. So then the other switch setting just makes it so that it's just focusing on the sound that's coming straight at the microphone, which would be from your voice. I think the big question most people would have would be, so if it's just a microphone, just a boom microphone on a little stick, how does that work? How do you use that? So it's actually fairly clever. So what they do is they have little magnetic mounting things that have double-sided tape on them. So you use double-sided tape to stick this little tiny circuit, like it's smaller than a dime. You stick this to the side of your normal headphones. Like these can't be earbuds. They have to be cans. And then this thing just magnetically attaches to the side of it. I wish everybody was on video.
Yeah, but we could actually hear it connect, which was kind of cool, right?
And it's a really strong magnet.
It is. It's a very strong magnet. And what's interesting about that connector is that it has ridges in it so that you're basically positioning the microphone in a very specific position, and it keeps it in place.
Right. So the microphone just sticks itself to the side of your headphones, and then the boom arm can be adjusted to place the actual mic part where you need it. And then you've got the cable situation to deal with. And they've put a lot of thought into the cable too. It's all modular. So the cable that's actually attached to the mic is probably a foot long, maybe 10 inches, has a typical male headphone cable on the end of it. And then they provide two different lengths of essentially headphone extension cables with it, which is nice that there's multiple lengths, because if you're connecting it to a computer, you might need a longer length. But if you're just connecting it to a game controller that's in your lap, you don't need a long cable. And then the other part that they include, this is new to the ModMic 5, is a piece that you can put in the middle that is basically just a big mute switch. So if you want to be able to quickly mute yourself, then you've got that too. If you don't need it and you don't want the weight or whatever, then you don't have to put it in the cable. And then the other question you might be thinking is, okay, so now I've got two cables coming from my head to my controller or whatever. Well, they've thought of that too. So because yes, the answer is yes, you do. So they've thought of cable management also. They include a bunch of little clips that will clip the two cables together. And then in addition to that, they provide what's essentially a big sleeve that you can tuck those two cables into so that it really just looks like one cable coming down from your headphones. And it's not two cables to get all twisted up and tangled and all of that. That's the cable management side. And then how do you actually connect this to everything?
So well, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second there. Like everything you just talked about, all of that is in the box with the Mod Mic 5.
Yeah, you don't have to buy all of this extra stuff. It's just all there.
Now, if you want to connect it and you don't have separate input and output jacks on your laptop or your computer, now they have some additional components that you can acquire to solve that problem.
Well, and even for some situations, they do include a Y adapter that's fairly standard. It's got separate input jacks for headphones, or I guess that's actually output, for headphones and microphone. And then on the other side is just a single
four-pole
adapter. So for like an Xbox One controller or most of your tablets and phones and things like that are used to getting a headset plugged into one jack, this thing will work.
Right.
And you just plug it in. I plugged it into my MacBook today and it worked. You know, MacBooks are weird devices. And sometimes these things work and sometimes they don't. This one worked in my MacBook. And by work, I mean the microphone was actually detected. So that was good. And then they also do have a standard USB plug that just has headphone and microphone jacks in them for you to plug it into if you need to hook it up to your computer that way, or a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One. I mean, you can do USB audio from an Xbox One, apparently, but I'm not sure why you would just plug this into your controller. That's the far easier way of doing it. So the question is it good? It is good. I tested it last night, playing PUBG with Joe, the guy that I do story players with. And he said, yeah, it sounds good. I didn't test every little setting of it with him. He said it sounded good, but he didn't notice a major increase in quality over the headsets that I normally use. So the one that I've lately been using is the Turtle Beach Stealth 600, I think it is. It's their lower end, completely wireless unit. But when I say lower end, that's a $100 headset. So we're not talking cheap, you know, Walmart, no name headset here that we're comparing it to. He said it sounded just as good as that, if not maybe a little bit better. So I guess then the question for a lot of people is going to be, well, why? Why do I want this? Why not just buy a headset? It's a little less to deal with. And if this just sounds as good, well, A, I think it's going to sound better than a lot of the cheaper headsets that are out there. But B, I think the reason you want to consider a solution like this is maybe you don't have a headset that you like. Maybe you just have some headphones that you love. Like the headphones that I'm wearing right now, I freaking love. And to use them as a headset on my Xbox or my PlayStation or anything, well, that's a pretty sweet setup. So this allows you to do that. Maybe you've got some really nice, you know, $200 or $300 headphones that make your game sound amazing, but sometimes you want to play multiplayer too. This is your answer to that. So that's what the Mod Mic 5 really does well. It obviously does other things well, like doing Skype and things like that, which, God, I can't tell you how many times I've had Skype calls with people with miserable headsets and stuff.
Or not even. They're just like talking at their computer that happens to be somewhere in the room.
Right. Right. So, you know, now that I've seen this, like, I kind of just want to just send people links to this every time I have miserable Skype calls. Like, go and buy this, please.
And when I spoke with them, that was actually one of the things that they said they're, you know, is a part of their business, is enterprises that are working with VoIP systems. And as people get more and more accustomed to doing video calls and stuff like that, and they realize that they need better sound quality, they have a product for that.
Yep. And they do actually have a version of this that's called the Mod Mic Business. That's a little bit less money. It doesn't have quite the same features. The cable's got an inline, not detachable mute switch, things like that. So there are some other options from these guys, but the Mod Mic 5, it's their primary device. It's geared more towards gamers. It's got all of this modularity built in, including the little travel case and stuff. And like Richard said, it includes everything. And the price, the MSRP is $69.95. So, you know, it's not the cheapest mic in the world, but it is without a doubt the most flexible. And I don't mean like bend the mic back and forth.
Although you can do that too.
You can do that too. It has the most utility of any mic I've ever used. So I'm going to keep using this to get a little bit more experience with it, since I've only gamed with it one night so far. But so far, I really like this.
If you're relatively new to the show and you didn't hear our interview a couple of weeks back, I actually interviewed one of the guys from the company at Antlion, and that's in episode 453. So you can check that out in our feed.
Cool. And we'll have a link to it in the show notes too. The only other big news story is another update to the Xbox software. And this is insiders only right now, because this is beta level software basically. But the newest version of the Xbox Insider software now includes
Don't say her name.
For voice assistants. Oh. I will say one of their names. I'm not afraid to say Cortana.
Yet.
But Amazon's assistant is also supported.
Very nicely done.
I've been around the block a time or two. I know how to do this thing without setting off everybody's Amazon. Never mind, just kidding. this is kind of neat. It's actually kind of bittersweet, right? Because when the Xbox One launched almost 5 years ago now, everybody got a Kinect with it, and that Kinect came set up to do a bunch of really useful voice commands. And they were voice commands that didn't take a lot of syllables and generally worked really well. You could turn your Xbox on and off really quickly. You could take screenshots and record video clips and launch games, all with very little effort. But then the Kinect, well, it kind of went the way of the dodo, and support for it basically dwindled. They eventually built support for those voice commands into, like, if you're using a headset with your controller, but that seems kind of weird. Like, your Xbox has to be on to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So,
and for the most part, when they did that, I mean, it was more or less a rebranding to Cortana, but that's all it was. It was rebranding. They didn't really build in all of the capabilities that you have with Cortana on, say, your PC or a mobile device.
Right. And the trigger phrase went from just being Xbox to "Hey, C name," which went from two syllables to four syllables, which just makes everything that much longer. And it seemed like it didn't listen as well. It didn't hear the commands as well, at least in my house, because my family used the voice commands a ton. And when they switched over to Cortana, My typical, you know, my family, they're pretty chill about this stuff. When the Cortana switch came over, they said, nope, this is not working for us. You have to turn this off and make it work the way that it did before. We're not using this. That's how bad the Cortana integration was when wow. it first launched. Yeah. Yeah. They normally don't make a stink about things, but for Cortana, they did. It got better, or so I hear. We don't really do that anymore, though. So now you don't have to use the Kinect or a headset. You don't have to use that. You can use the Amazon Echo devices that you have around your home. Or if you have one, the Harman Kardon Invoke, which is still the only speaker available on the market that has Cortana built in.
And when you say now, you mean in this insider's release?
Correct. Correct. We're still talking insiders here, so this won't be generally available for another, I would guess, month or two. It's usually in the October timeframe that they release the big new software to everybody.
But Amazon services aside, I mean, this is something that we had hoped for Cortana for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Because the Invoke's been around for a long time. So it just seemed like it would make... And Cortana's been on the Xbox for... Gosh, we have to be going on 3-ish years that Cortana's been on the Xbox.
Has it really been branded Cortana that long? I'm thinking 2.
I think so.
Really?
Well, yeah. So it's at least 2, but it's been a long time and it feels like forever. And... You know, since then, we've gotten Cortana on Windows 10 PCs and then the Invoke, and none of them would actually control the Xbox, which was nuts. And now they do. So again, now if you're an insider, but soon for everybody else. But this actually still sounds better if you use Amazon's assistant to do this. They have a skill. It's the Xbox skill, which I think the difference between a skill and whatever the other thing is that you don't have to ask Amazon's assistant to ask somebody else's assistant to do the things for you.
Oh no, you sort of still do. You either need to ask her to ask Cortana to do something, or you need to start Cortana. And then you can use your Echo to do whatever Cortana would be able to do.
Well, for general Cortana integration, yes. But if GE makes a skill for your washer and dryer, you don't have to say, hey, Madam A, ask GE to do this for me.
But yeah, actually, you kind of do.
Okay, well, then maybe some of this wording is wrong, because in their sample phrases, and I'm going to replace the actual assistant's name here, I'm going to go with Stacey Higginbotham's way and just say Madam A instead of her actual name. They say that you can say, Madam A, start Rocket League.
Okay.
It's not Madam A, ask Xbox to start Rocket League. Just start Rocket League.
What they've probably done there is they've probably created a Rocket League skill that is specific to the Amazon environment, and it knows that it's actually controlling something over on your Xbox.
Hmm. Because they're saying that if you were to do that, it would start up your Xbox, sign you in, and launch Rocket League.
Yeah.
And then on the same page, their example for Cortana is, and I'm just going to say it because I'm not too worried about setting off anything. Hey, Cortana, tell Xbox to open Netflix. That's way more words. Right?
Well, right. Right.
I think some of our listeners are probably going to be sitting there thinking, Josh, you're counting syllables and words. And the reason that I'm doing that is because the more words it takes, the more likely you are to forget exactly how to say it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about syllables or how many words. It's about, does this make sense? You know,
right.
And to talk to your Cortana device and ask it to tell it to do something specifically on the Xbox, as opposed to using the name Cortana on your Xbox to just do this? Yeah, I this is cumbersome. I mean, this it will shake itself out, but right now this is cumbersome.
It sounds like from the Amazon side, it's not so cumbersome. So I don't have any of these Amazon Voice Assistant devices. You've got bunches of them, though. So I think that once this becomes available, we're going to need you to try it out and let us know.
Yeah, and it depends on how you're using it. So on the episode of Home On that'll be coming out soon, not already out yet, I talked a little bit about how the services between devices, between the Cortana speakers and between the Echoes, are now available. And those services allow you to invoke your Amazon Assistant from a Cortana speaker or from your computer, or it lets you invoke Cortana from your Echo. And those are kind of interesting because Cortana on your Echo basically gives you access to your Microsoft Calendar and all the sort of scheduling stuff that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get to. And that's pretty powerful, but it's fairly limited. It's really only featuring the things that you can do in a Microsoft environment. Mm-hmm. The other way around, I can ask Cortana on my computer to launch Madam A, and then I can, using my normal language that I would use with my Echo device, ask her to do anything I would ask my Echo to do, mm-hmm. using the exact same language, and it works, including third-party skills. So it's kind of powerful, but it's kind of convoluted. And so if you're interested in more about how that works, because again, lots of words, lots of things to remember, we'll be covering that in an upcoming episode of Home On in much more depth.
Cool. Very cool. And then the only other big unfortunate part, at least for me, and well, frankly, for a lot of people, is no Google support yet. If you've got Google Home devices all around your house like I do, nah, no dice here.
Well, and you say yet. I mean, no Google support even ever discussed.
Right, but I seem to remember, I didn't go and dig, but I thought that there was a screenshot leaked a while ago when some of this digital assistant settings started to appear for some people, that it did mention Google Home. So I have hope that it is actually coming.
I know we've talked about Google Home in relation to the Xbox. I don't really have a good feel for where that integration is going to be, like what it's going to do.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it seems like it should be exactly the same thing as this.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to
just say, hey, geez, start NHL 19. And it would do the same thing that Madam A would do.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe someday. Yeah, maybe.
The doubter doubts. All right, let's move on. So that's it for our gaming news. But we always like to take a quick peek at the sales that are going on the Xbox and the PlayStation side and see if there's anything worth mentioning. There's a couple. On the Xbox side, for Xbox One, basically, if there's an Assassin's Creed game, a Battlefield game, or a Far Cry game that you don't own, that you want to own, it's probably on sale right now. So check out the sale for that. And then, Richard, I'd like to ask you to read the name of this other game that I point out, because it is 70% off and was a pretty big name game that came out just last fall.
I think we talked about this before. This is South Park, The Fractured. I want to put a comma here. Comma. It's not really there, but you need it. But Whole.
Right. Right, yeah. Nothing strange there.
Right.
That new South Park game, it's $18. So that's that's a pretty big deal. So if you're looking for that, check that out. It's pick that up, because I can't remember seeing that on sale recently, and that's a huge, huge discount. On PlayStation, maybe the easiest way to say this is what feels like almost every game that we've played for story players, it's on sale over on PlayStation. Almost. And there's one that I absolutely have to point out, because I think this is the first time it's really gone on sale, and that's Detroit Become Human, which, oh man, was that game good. And it makes sense that this would be the first time that it's really on sale, because it came out in May. So that game is down to about $39 right now on PlayStation.
Cool. Hey, why don't we talk about the stuff that we can get for free? I'll do Xbox, you do PlayStation. How about that?
You know what? I'm gonna, sure. Yeah, you do that.
All right. So just to keep this quick, the stuff that's going away on Xbox, meaning if you want to get it soon, we have For Honor, and that is on the Xbox One. That's going away on the 15th. So catch that. That's a big one. Like, I was actually surprised. I think it's like 50 gig or something like that. It's big. It needs a lot of space. And then Lego Star Wars 3, The Clone Wars, that is also going away on the 15th. So make sure to catch that. That's the Xbox 360 version. But of course, it will run on your Xbox One. And that only needs like 6 or 7 gigs. So I downloaded that one. Now, coming up at the latter half of the month, we have Live Lock, a three player co-op twin stick shooter on the Xbox One. And then we have Sega Vintage Collection Monster World on Xbox 360, also available starting on the 16th.
Okay. And the reason that I let you do the Xbox games and I'm going to do the PlayStation games is I'm just going to say, click the link in the show notes, because unlike
Xbox...
Are you
so totally cheated?
I did cheat, because unlike Xbox, they don't do this weird thing where it splits in the middle of the month. It's still weird, because it's not exactly the first and last day of the month. Like, here they lie. It's available until October 2nd. What? I don't get it. Most of these are available for what is essentially the whole month of September. We already covered all of them 2 weeks ago. So if you really want the details, go back and listen to the end of the show 2 weeks ago. So that'd be 457. Otherwise, just click the link in the show notes to find out what games you can get for free on the various PlayStation devices. All right. We do have one more big piece of news here. And I don't like putting this near the end, because I'm hoping that we didn't lose listeners at this point. But Richard started doing this. Richard started this habit of putting Plex news in the last segment, because it's cross media. It's not just audio or video. It's all of it. Right. So we've got some Plex news, and it's here at the end of the show. And this is practically breaking news. This story just hit a few hours ago. Plex is shutting down their Plex cloud service. Now, I'm going to give a little bit of a refresher of what this is, because as Richard and I were talking before the show, he wasn't even all that clear.
Yeah, I was totally forgetting
what Plex cloud is.
Yep.
So Plex cloud is / soon to be was a service that allows you to run a Plex server in the cloud. You don't have to run Plex on any machine that's in your house. It's just running in the cloud somewhere. And the only thing you really need to provide it is a way to give it your storage. You know, where is all of your media? Where are your videos? Where is all of your audio and all of that stuff? So the way that worked was to put it in another cloud storage provider. They started with Amazon storage. They later added OneDrive and Google storage and Dropbox, and then eventually dropped Amazon after Amazon got kind of weird and started dropping Amazon storage stuff. But it sounds like they had lots of technical issues with the Plex cloud service. So they've decided they either can't or just are choosing not to try to devote any more resources to fixing the issues that people were having. And I'm sure there's a lot that factors into that. You know, how many people were trying to use this? How big were the issues? Are they issues with performance of these third-party storage providers? Who knows? They didn't give a lot of details as to what factored into this, but they, while this story was originally written by Variety, The Verge got a comment back from Plex, and Plex told them, after a lot of investigation and thought, we haven't found a solution capable of delivering a truly first-class Plex experience to Plex Cloud users at a reasonable cost. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, you had to be a Plex Pass subscriber to use this too. It wasn't free. They continued, while we are super bummed about the impact this will have on our happy cloud users, ending support for it will allow us to focus on improving core functionality, adding new features, and content. So it's always unfortunate to see a cool feature being removed, but it sounds like it's for the best if it really was that problematic for users. No feature, no matter how cool it is worth keeping around if it can't work reliably. So if you have been using Plex Cloud, you have until November 30th to figure out what you're doing in the meantime. The nice thing is you don't have to worry about your storage. Like you've been storing all of that stuff on your OneDrive or your Google Drive or your Dropbox already. And Plex doesn't mess with that. You know, when Plex Cloud goes away, you're not going to lose your stuff. You're not going to have to like re-upload all of your movies to OneDrive or anything crazy like that. You're just not going to have a Plex server anymore. So if you've been loving Plex, well, either build a PC, build a NAS, grab an NVIDIA Shield TV. There's a lot of options for building a Plex server. We've talked about what feels like all of them at various times on this podcast. So that's what you're going to be looking at, because you've got, 2.5 months to figure out what to do if you've been depending on Plex Cloud.
You know, because there are so many ways to set up a Plex server, this isn't something that I even considered. And of course, you and I have been building home theater PCs for years, so having a server that has content on it and a Plex server, not a big deal.
Right.
I don't know anybody to use this. Do you?
No, I have a coworker who briefly set it up to kind of try it out, but no, I don't know anybody who is using Plex Cloud as their primary Plex server. But the idea makes so much sense as long as you've got, I don't know, the right amount of media, because if you had, you know, dozens of terabytes of movies or something, that would probably be way too expensive to put in the cloud.
It does. I think when we were talking about this, one of the things that I was doing in my head was I was conflating this with the service that PlayOn offers.
Oh, okay.
Right? Where you have this PlayOn Cloud offering where you can record stuff from streaming services on their cloud. They store it on their cloud for 30 days, and you can download it or watch it. And after that, it goes away. And it's essentially a cloud DVR with a time bomb for the streaming services. And it's something that is so tightly encapsulated, you don't have to worry about the back end. You don't have to worry about where is this stuff stored. It's just all packaged together as one big product. And I think that's the real difference here, is that PlayOn managed to come out with a solution that makes all of the infrastructure invisible to you. Whereas on the Plex side, you still had to think a little bit about the infrastructure, right, even if you weren't hosting it yourself. And overall, as a product offering, I just don't see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. All right, Richard, What's going on in your entertainment center?
All right, we'll do this pretty quickly. Big Brother, of course, been watching that. It's been a fun season. Man, I think this is probably my favorite season of Big Brother ever. I think it has been fantastic. Better Call Saul, I've been trying to catch up on that. I'm a little bit behind Game of Thrones. We are now talking about season 4 on Let's Talk About Thrones, so I have been watching that. We are currently putting out episodes for season 3. So we're usually a season ahead of where we're producing so that we can kind of, you know, leave ourselves some wiggle room there. Watched a little bit more Deadwood, really enjoying that. And as I mentioned, if you're interested in catching up on what I'm watching on TV, the TV Time app is where you can catch that. I'm R. Gunther, R-G-U-N-T-H-E-R. And you need to let me know ahead of time because I don't just accept anybody who wants to follow me. My account is a closed account, but I'm happy to have anybody do that. You just need to let me know, hey, you know, I listen to you on the show. Also watched a couple of movies. Ferdinand, really fun animated film. I think it's a DreamWorks film. Have you seen this one?
No, it's funny that this is something you just watched because my wife is, of course, the PTO president for elementary school, and they're doing a movie night tomorrow night, and that is the movie they're watching. But I will not be around, or not tomorrow night, Thursday night, and I won't be there to watch it. But that is what they're watching.
That's a fun movie.
Is that any good?
Yeah, okay. It's fun. It's a fun movie. I totally enjoyed it. Absolutely. It is not as good as the trailers. The trailers are the funniest parts of the film.
But I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I know, but it's funny. It's enjoyable. Also watch Tomorrowland. I've seen it before, but we ended up watching it through because it was on one of the cable channels. And RGB, got that wrong. If you don't know what that is, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah, it was right. RBG. Yeah. Ruth, yeah, Bader Ginsburg. I had this wrong. I've never heard of her referred to as RBG, but apparently that's a thing.
And yeah, the notorious RBG.
Yeah, I never heard of that before. Kind of, this is hard for me to come at from a nonpartisan perspective, but I will say this. I believe that this movie is so well done that regardless of your political beliefs or affiliation, you can kind of just, you can appreciate this movie and appreciate what she brings to the court. And they try not to get into all the partisan stuff, but instead focus on all of the things that she has done. And I, again, did not really know this, to change court decisions dramatically with regard to gender inequality in the court system and in our legal system. And I just thought this was a wonderful, wonderful film. It is available to watch for free on CNN. And so it's probably on CNN Go or any of the online versions as well, if you wanted it on demand.
So if you're a cord cutter, is there any way of watching this?
Ah, that's a really good question that I don't know the answer to.
Okay, cool. All right, that sounds interesting. I mean, there's got to be a lot of source material there. She's 92, I think. She's been a Supreme Court justice for 30-ish years now. So yeah, there's got to be a lot worth discussing in that. So,
and I knew so little about her, and I was just really kind of blown away by it. I was very, very impressed. So
yeah.
I mentioned that I ended up buying a demo disc for content that I saw at the show. What I bought was Hans Zimmer Live in Prague. It is a Blu-ray and DVD movie that is a concert movie, basically. I didn't even know this existed, and I'm ashamed to admit, as the Hans Zimmer geek that I am, that right. I did not know this existed. The demo that I saw blew me away. It was a performance of songs from Pirates of the Caribbean. And this is just a beautiful, beautiful concert that is just so well executed, and the lighting and the performances, and it's in Atmos. And this, as far as I'm concerned, is an Atmos reference disc. You are nice. Just swallowed by the performance in this movie. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Also, I didn't know that Hans Zimmer plays as many damn instruments as he does. Holy crap. Just in this concert, he played like 6 different instruments. It was amazing. Wow.
That is
really, really cool. So if you're into him, I highly suggest you get it or you watch it. It is phenomenal. Like I mentioned, it's in Atmos. If I can get through this without getting all choked up, there's an awesome scene where he talks about how they created a specific theme that they end up using in the Batman movies. And or that they end up using in the Batman movies. And I swear, if it doesn't tug at your heart, you're dead inside. It's just an absolutely amazing story. And I think anyone who loves his music or the movie work that he does with Christopher Nolan and other directors, you're going to love this performance. By the way, if you don't want to buy it, but buy it if you want the Atmos. But if you don't want to buy it and you just want to listen in 5.1, you can stream it on Netflix now for free.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yep. Finally, that's pretty much all I've been watching, but I just want to mention I'm really excited about The First on Hulu, the movie with Sean Penn that looks like it is going to be a series about the first people to go to Mars.
Wait. You said movie and you said series.
Sorry.
Is this a movie or a TV series?
I think it is a limited series is probably the best way to put it. I think it is a one season series about going to Mars.
And does Hulu release everything at once or do they dole these out week after week?
Well, that depends what show you're talking about. I don't know how they're going to do this. I don't know how they're going to do this. My bet is that this will be weekly.
Because that sounds cool.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing about it. And then if it is this week after week thing and you say it's awesome, then maybe once it's all available, I'll sign up for a month of Hulu and check this out.
All right, that's it for me. How about you?
Okay, so I watched, I think, just one more episode of Jack Ryan. It's harder to find time for shows when it's me and Jen watching them together, but still enjoying that. I did find a little bit of time to watch TV on my own over the weekend and thought, I never made it very far into The Gifted. I should go back and watch some of that. And the reason I thought about that was I saw some other random headline that mentioned that there was a season 2 coming soon. And I thought, oh, it wasn't canceled. All right, I guess I'll watch the rest of it then. I'm kind of surprised it wasn't canceled. Superheroes on Fox, it's got to get canceled. But it didn't. So made it a little bit further into that. And I also tried out a new service that we've mentioned recently, ESPN Plus. This is that streaming only service from ESPN. That's a subscription.
Right.
It's $5 a month. The only reason I tried this is my Bowling Green Falcons were playing a Big Ten team. They were playing Maryland and I wanted to watch that game. And it was only being shown on ESPN Plus. So I signed up for the 7-day free trial, set a reminder in my calendar to cancel that, and watched
very smart.
The football game. I started it on my tablet, and then once, you know, bedtime and all that stuff was over with, Chromecasted it up to my TV and watched the rest of the game that way. It worked flawlessly. The picture quality was nice. The app works pretty well. There isn't a separate app. It's just the ESPN app. It doesn't have a separate app. So that's kind of nice. And yeah, I've got no complaints with ESPN Plus outside of the limited content. But if you're trying to watch mid-major college football games, then maybe ESPN Plus is the right service for you for $5 a month. And then on the gaming front, I got back into PUBG, into PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. The official release version 1.0 of that finally came out for Xbox One in the last week. Check that out. Man, does it run so much better. This game is so much more polished than it ever had been previously on the Xbox One. If you had heard nothing but bad things when it first launched on Xbox One, it is worth giving a try now. It is a far better experience. The frame rate is far more consistent. And the overall UI, just so much of it has been cleaned up. It works so much better now. And there's three different maps to play on now. So that's all very cool. Looking forward to playing more of that. Played a little bit more Horizon Zero Dawn on PlayStation. And this coming Friday, NHL 19 comes out. So you know I'm going to be playing a ton of that. But a little known, maybe a little known secret, exclusive to Xbox One, EA has that EA Access program.
Right.
Their subscription thing where you get to play older titles for, I think it's $5 a month or $30 for a year. There's other perks like getting early access to games. So I gave EA $5, and with EA Access, you get 10 hours of time with new games before they even come out. So I played 3-ish hours of NHL 19 over the weekend also, despite the fact that it's not out and I haven't even purchased the whole game yet. So that's a nice little trick for y'all. So obviously really looking forward to that. Super quick review of that. If you're into hockey games and you're like, yeah, they're always the same year after year after year, this is the biggest change to the NHL series in probably 4 versions. So if you haven't played in a couple of versions, check this one out. It's got some new modes. The skating feels a lot different. The passing is different. It's overall a pretty significantly better game over the previous few versions of NHL. So it's worth checking out.
Cool.
And you can play with me all the time. I'd love it. It's great. All right. That's going to do it for us for an extended episode of the show, but a lot to cover. So if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook. We've got the other podcast. Richard already mentioned Home On. You've got an episode that just came out. Today?
Yeah.
Is it today?
Yeah. How about that? So actually we did, I'm going to say we, because you were instrumental in making this happen. We did a live show at Cedia. And what that really meant was I was recording a live stream of me recording back-to-back interviews as opposed to going from booth to booth and then stitching it all together. We did our best to try and get that out on Stitcher. Sorry, not Stitcher. What am I thinking? Out on Mixer. But we had lots of technical difficulties between losing the stream, which was probably the Wi-Fi there on the floor, and my battery dying on my computer. So ultimately, it wasn't such a great live show. But we did, in fact, get, I think, a pretty good show out of it. We got some good interviews talking with people from the Z-Wave Alliance, which was our sponsor for the episode. We spoke with Instian, Control 4, Sonos, Monoprice. I had a lot of fun doing it. Thank you, Josh. And I want to thank Joe DeGanzik over at Smarter Home Life for helping to pull all that together. And it was a lot of fun. We'll probably try it again, but hopefully next time we'll have better luck getting an actual video signal out. We will be putting a video service or a video version of this out, probably on our YouTube channel. It's not going to be pretty. I'm just saying, sync problems, streaming glitches. But, you know, I said there'd be a video, so there will be video. Just don't watch it closely, okay?
Right. And then my other podcast is Story Players, where we analyze story-driven video games. Still the most recent episode is the one where we covered the most recent season 4, episode 1 of The Walking Dead video game. And then at the end of the month, we'll have two new episodes coming out for you for the next episode of The Walking Dead and the first episode in Life is Strange Season 2. So those are only a couple of weeks away there on the Story Players front. And then if you're just into this show and you'd rather us stop talking about other podcasts, well, then you should come and listen to us record this live. It goes a lot better than the Home On live stream did.
Hey!
Because we don't have to deal with show floor problems. That's the only reason why. And we typically record this Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter to find out for sure when it's happening. But that's we've been pretty consistent with that lately. So come and check us out live and chat along with us in the chat room. That's going to do it for episode 459. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.